It takes more than a headphone dent in your hair to be a great software engineer. This is episode 430 of the Soft Skills Engineering Podcast, where I am your host, Jameson Dance.
I'm your host, Dave Smith.
Soft Skills Engineering is a weekly advice show about all the non-technical things that go into the technical field of software development, like, I guess, doing your hair with your headphones. There's probably like headphone-specific hairdos, right? Can like incorporate them into the do.
Yeah, like you. Well, last time I went to the barber, they handed me a catalog and they said, step one is pick the headphones you wear and we'll have a different cut for you depending on.
Yeah, if you carve a headphone groove into your hair, then the headphones won't stick out anymore.
Yeah.
Of course, we are being very rude to all the people that do not have hair and still wear headphones.
Well, now you just get a skull dent.
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering. You have to get like, it's like when you sleep all weird and then you wake up and there are lines on your face. Do you get one of those on your head?
Yes.
I'll tell you in a few years.
Yeah. I actually, so sometimes when I ride a bike before work sometimes and I have a nice helmet line across my forehead, it's like the same thing.
Do you have a helmet tan?
Yes, I have had that. Usually it's just a burn and then back to, you know, non-tan.
Okay, so it's not a healthy tan line. It's your face got fried.
Yeah.
And then it was protected not only from impact, but the cruel rays of the sun.
Well, yeah, there's holes in the top of my helmet that let the sun shine through as well. So I usually get spots. I look like a leopard print helmet burn line.
Nice. I heard that's a hot look.
Yeah, it's hot, literally.
Hey, all right. Dave, do you want to thank our patrons?
All right. Yes, we would like to thank those that are giving so much that they get a weekly shout out. They are Nick Molyneux, Big Chungus, I'm happy for you, and I'm going to let you finish, but Hawktua is the funniest meme of all time. A one-time shout out to Ill Wangel, Bracket Object Bracket, Javier Gonzalez, Chewy, Ted Timbrell, BecomeASeniorEngineer.com, Unsalted French Fries are morally objectionable. Dan from Drone Deploy, Chase W. Norton, level up your TypeScript with TypeHero.dev, never is not just creator on Mars, let me go emoji. I like chicken, I like liver, meowmix, please deliver, Trash Panda, Kyle Boss, Kent, C. Dodds, Nevar is not just a planet in the Vulcan system, Jenny Kim, Owen Shartle, The Stochastic Parrot, Helicone.ai, best observability tool for AI, Red Panda is best panda, everyone in this list, Jonathan Kings and I, beautiful functional user documentation, I like meowmix, I like chicken, oh no, wait. www.illwangel.com. That's www.illwangel.com. I just bought a house.
Well, congratulations.
Travis, Braden Gaines, John Grant. If you would like to join this illustrious crew, go to softskills.audio and click the support us on Patreon button. Please, someone put this on a shirt. I use Vim, but I'm not good at it. Thank you. If you would like to join this illustrious crew, go to softskills.audio and click the support us on Patreon button.
This just makes me want to look back 4 or 5 years ago and see what this list looked like, because I'm pretty sure it was just names. And names are great, but it has spilled the bounds of sensibility and devolved into absurdity, which is excellent.
Oh, I just randomly scrolled back like 90 episodes and someone pulled the "if you would like to join this illustrious crew" stunt. So... that's not
just one time back then.
I don't know. I'm not going to look at all of them, but it was there on the random one that I picked up.
That was like 2 years ago.
I know.
Have we been saying, oh man, I don't know what time is.
Yeah, pretty much. It was mostly names. I'm just going back. Yeah.
You know, if I don't perceive the passage of time, does that mean I am a time traveler? Basically.
If you don't perceive it?
Kind of. Yeah, like I just don't notice time passing.
Oh, time passed. How do you notice that you don't notice time passing without noticing that time's passing?
I'm going to read our first question.
Let's get out of here.
Okay, this is from a listener named Alex P., who says, I work at a large tech company. Been here about 2 years at the time of writing this question. I got in by sheer luck, since I've interviewed at many teams in this company before finally landing an offer, and I'm starting to think I don't belong. I constantly feel like I don't do a good job to the point where I'm starting to feel incredibly depressed. My question is, what would you do in this situation? I keep thinking I should leave, but it's not like the work is stressful and not interesting. I also realize I have a pretty solid setup. 6 mile no traffic commute, great coworkers, free electric vehicle charging, and job security seems solid. So I'm hesitant on giving that up. I also think, even if I leave, would I just repeat the cycle again at a new job slash company? I'm pretty stuck.
How do you get a 6-mile no traffic commute at a big tech company?
Maybe they live in the farthest corner of the parking lot.
It's 6 miles away. There's technically no traffic. Away. I parked right outside my house and walked the parking lot.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a like a satellite office somewhere.
This feels like one of those GeoSpotter challenges where you get dropped into a Google Street View and you have to figure out where you are.
Yeah. We got to find the 6-mile no traffic commute from a big tech company office and then zoom in and see the actual person on Street View. And aha!
I'm looking forward.
We found you, Alex.
Yeah, and we found your house.
Yeah.
We know exactly where you live. I'm just looking forward to someone writing in with a question, but it's just a simple Google Maps link. And when we click it, it's like, wait, what is this? Oh, that's 6 miles from a tech company with no traffic. I know exactly who this is.
Or it's a link, and then we look at the street view on the link, and there's a person holding a sign with the question on it.
It says, from Alex P., I work at a large tech company.
It's an alternate, what is it, alternate reality game? That's not what it is. What does ARG stand for?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that term, but I love it already.
It's not augmented reality. It's those games... It's a marketing stunt where there's some game or movie or something they're trying to advertise and they like have a code on a website and the code leads to a coordinates and you go to the coordinates and there's some box you have to dig up that has a puzzle in it. Is it augmented reality? What does ARG stand for? Alternate reality game?
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, let's do one of those.
Yeah, one of those. I think we have to invent a mythos about the soft skills engineering universe and why there's like espionage and intrigue and stuff.
We need to do some world building and some lore.
Yeah, which we will do after we answer this question.
Yes, that's our next meeting. Okay, so what would you do if you, I mean, what would you do if you landed on this team and it was like your sixth attempt to interview at the same company? And you finally got in, and then you're like, oh, crap, what have I done? Why am I here?
I would think about that XKCD comic where scientists test 20 different colors of jelly beans, and each time they publish a result that says we are 95%, there's a 95% confidence interval that this jelly bean doesn't do anything, and then they test one of them one time, and then all these headlines pop up that are like, this jelly bean causes cancer.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes. Oh, yes. I thought you were going to say the jelly bean moved on its own.
I don't know what the actual effect was, but the joke that I'm butchering is like, if you have a p-value of 0.05, you do it 20 times and expecting random variation, you'll get a result that seems significant one of the 20 times.
You got lucky. That was a very long-winded way of saying
basically,
you got lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very long way of saying you got lucky, I guess. But I got in by sheer luck.
I mean, that's what the question asker said, so it's reasonable.
Yeah, that's true. I did just waste
a lot of words. I liked the way you said it, though.
I don't believe you because I don't think I said it well. But I am going to focus on one thing here. I'm starting to feel incredibly depressed. And I wonder if that's actually more of the cause than the fact that you don't feel like you belong. Like maybe that's a symptom of you just feeling really crappy and depressed in general.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where our space psychology does not help in this situation, unfortunately. But feeling incredibly depressed, no matter what the cause is, you could benefit from talking to somebody, maybe.
But not your manager? Is that... Maybe not.
No. Well, what I'm saying is if you're feeling incredibly depressed, you think it's because you're this imposter who doesn't belong at work. It's possible you are feeling incredibly depressed because of mental health issues, and you could talk to a psychologist and get some help with that. That wouldn't require giving up this, what seems like a pretty good setup overall.
Yeah. You know, it's remarkable how easy it is for, I guess, any employee, but maybe especially software engineers, to conclude that they are doing a bad job. And let me just give you a great example. I recently spent some time with a very longtime friend of mine. We've worked at three companies together, and he is just an amazing, excellent engineer. And we worked together at our second company more than 10 years ago. And he came in, joined the team. And in our engineering department, we had four or five engineering teams. And he would show up and work and do such a good job that the head of our engineering department would see this amazing work and then would be like, hey, you know, this person's been on this team for a year. They did so good. I'm going to move them to another team and just have this person like pollinate every team. You know, I'm going to move them over there and just say, look, do all the good things that you did on this last team here for this other team. And then the next year he got invited for the first time ever, an engineer got invited to our annual sales team, like resort vacation thing that you have to earn through hitting just amazing sales targets. But they said, this guy's so good that we're going to invite him to this annual retreat with a plus one, all expenses paid for a week. Yeah, it was amazing. So this all went down over 10 years ago. And just this weekend, I was chatting with him and he said, you know, Dave, during that time, I kept getting moved around from team to team. And I thought it was because I was doing a bad job. It's like, I thought, oh my gosh. And he goes, you know, I think back on that now and I realize in hindsight that I was doing such a good job that the company was rewarding me and having me exert more influence on more teams. But at the time, it sure felt like punishment. And I just thought, if you can interpret that as punishment, then I can't imagine, I don't know, I just, it, anyone's possible of perceiving anything.
Yeah. I constantly feel like I don't do a good job. I think your own feelings are important because they affect a lot of your life, but they don't determine whether you're doing a good job or not.
The main thing that your feelings determine is what you feel.
Yeah, exactly. And you feel crappy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot you can do to get a different viewpoint of whether the company thinks you're doing a good job or not. You don't owe it. It feels like you have this unspoken assumption that you owe your company what feels to you like an excellent job. And I think there's some admirable stuff about that. It means, I don't know, you want to work hard and do well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they care that much about how you feel about how you're doing. I think they care about
how you're actually doing.
You're doing.
That's right.
Yeah. So how if you feel like you're doing a bad job, you're sort of like saying, well, I'll fall on my sword. I'll quit because I don't deserve to be here.
Uh-huh.
Feeling like you're doing a really bad job isn't great, but it
doesn't feel good.
Quitting. Yeah. It feels crappy.
Yeah.
But falling on your sword could be worse. Like, maybe they're really happy with what you're doing, and this is just a perspective that you have.
Yeah.
So you can probe at this and see how you are doing or how other people think you are doing. You've been there 2 years? I mean, you've been there for two hard years also, where a lot of big tech companies have laid off a lot of people. And presumably, I know it's not perfect, but if someone were very obviously doing a really bad job, it's a lot harder to get by over the past couple of years than maybe you could a few years ago. So,
yeah, if you survived the last 2 years without getting laid off at a big tech company, I would say that's a really strong signal that you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, but if your brain is convinced you're doing a bad job, that will not help.
It won't. You don't think it'll help convince your brain you're doing a good job?
I don't think so. I think you need feedback from your peers.
Okay.
And maybe you're getting it. Maybe it's not in the question. And maybe you feel like you're doing a bad job because they'll tell you, hey, you're doing a really poor job. But what I suspect is happening is maybe you have done a poor job at some things, right? And you just have latched on to that thing of like,
spoiler
you screwed
alert,
up this thing.
Listen, you definitely have. You've definitely done a bad job at one point, at least.
Yeah,
not because of any, not because of anything I read in the question, but because I presume you are a human being who wrote this question and not a computer, which means you have messed up something.
Yeah, and I think you're right when you ask at the end of the question, if I leave, would I just repeat the cycle again at a new job and company? And I think probably, given what I see here, you need to develop the skill of accurately assessing how you are doing.
Yes, and not just how you are feeling.
Yeah. If you don't have that and you go to your next job, you'll have a honeymoon, you'll feel great because you'll be in this exciting new environment, and then it might just creep back in. And if you don't have the ability to dig in and say, how do I collect more information about how I'm actually doing so that I can fix it or determine, like, there's no fixing it and I got to go somewhere else.
Exactly.
Then I think you might end up in the same cycle.
Here's a little metaphor that I think everyone should probably understand as a software engineering audience. Let's say that you're using the product that you develop at work and you're playing around with it and you realize it's got this little bug. And you're like, I see this bug. Is it just me or is this bug widespread? Well, what do? You go to logs, you go to analytics, you go to custom metrics, and you try to figure out how objectively real and objectively impactful this bug is. In other words, you look for other sources of information besides just your own individual experience to confirm or to reject the hypothesis that this is an important thing that needs to be fixed. And that's exactly the situation you find yourself in now. You have these feelings that are so real that they're actually causing you to have psychological distress. The question asker used the term incredibly depressed. And so this is like a very real data point. But what you don't know is if it's actually corroborated by reality. And so I'm just going to say exactly what you said, Jameson. I would go to my manager and I would ask, listen, hey, I want to do a great job at this company. I love this team. I love working here. I want to be successful. I want the company to be successful. I'm a little concerned. I love my commute. Yes. Listen, the parking lot's kind of huge, but we can look past that. I have a little bit of a concern that I'm not performing well enough. Can you help me understand that? Because listen, you're either going to find out one way or the other. You're either going to find out by getting fired someday or by some other kind of horrible experience, or you can ask and find out now and do something about it. So, and the answer may very well come back, yeah, you're not doing a good job. But the fact, whether you're doing a good job or not, doesn't change when your manager tells you. The only thing that changes is that you're aware of it now. So there's only two outcomes that are kind of, well, there's three outcomes that I've seen come out of these kinds of discussions. The one outcome is the manager corroborates your concern, which is, yes, you're doing a bad job, and then you can work on it. Great. The other outcome is the manager rejects your concern and says, no, you're actually doing a great job. And you walk away happy, and hopefully you can start to work, you know, have your feelings improve. But there's a third outcome that has two sub-branches that are kind of bad. On the one hand, the manager will be like, I don't know. Let me get back to you. And then you're like, oh, crap. Or I just don't know, and I'm not really going to tell you anything concrete, or they dance around the question. The other option is that the manager tells you you're doing a good job, but you don't believe your manager because you don't believe that your manager has enough direct observability of what you're doing to actually have an informed opinion. And I've been in that situation before where the manager's like, you're doing great. And then I walk away still feeling like things might be bad. And my manager just doesn't know. And my manager is one conversation away from thinking I do bad because they hear something from one of my coworkers.
Yeah. So are you saying gather more information, talk to your coworkers about that? What do you do if you're in that state?
I don't know. It's always a little weird to go to your coworkers and say, how am I performing? But it's worth it. But you have to ask them more specific questions. You can't just say, I feel incredibly depressed because I'm underperforming. Do you think I'm underperforming? Instead, you have to ask some very specific questions. And what's the name of that wonderful, the Wizard Zines comic author?
Oh, Julia Evans, I think?
Yes. Julia Evans has some great ideas on questions you can ask your coworkers to get actual feedback instead of just like, hey, no, everything's great. She's got a list of specific questions you can ask in one of those zines. I can't remember which one, but you can buy all 14, it looks like, for a good bargain price. So just go buy all of them. I don't know. And then read them all.
You can find it and link to it, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Get
more data. Specific questions are much easier to answer. I mean, if you flip it around and imagine your coworker saying, hey, how am I doing? Your answer is going to be fine,
yeah,
I guess.
Good.
Because you're not going to say, I've spent hours preparing for this question, have detailed feedback.
Yes, I have a list. I've just been waiting for you to ask.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you need to dig into this more and understand how you're doing. And I feel like I don't belong is a crappy feeling. It's also not very actionable.
Mm-hmm.
You don't owe it to the company to quit because you feel like you don't belong. If you're not happy there, you don't have to stay. But if you're not happy because you think they're unhappy with you, you can find that out. And you can also decide, you know what, I want to work on some of this stuff and try and make it better.
Yeah.
Well, have we answered the question?
I think so. Good luck. Go get more information and learn what the reality is. Trust your feelings to tell you how you feel. Do not trust them to tell you what reality is.
So wise. Do you want to read our next question?
Sure thing. This comes from an anonymous listener who says, I'm 1 year into my first job at a megacorp post-graduation. Due to high turnover, I've ended up taking on tasks that would have originally gone to more experienced developers. I've grown and received positive feedback from my manager and skip manager, who have both mentioned potential for promotion. However, in my one-on-ones, I've expressed that I'm not looking for a promotion yet because I want to solidify my current role and improve my work-life balance. I still have many coding fundamentals to develop, and I've been stressed and working long hours to take on these responsibilities. I'm now worried that my honesty might have affected my chances of being promoted and that I might be seen as someone not interested in progressing, which is probably frowned upon in big tech. How should I navigate the situation? Is it okay that I've been candid, or should I reconsider my stance on promotion? Thanks.
Year into first job. Yeah, if trying to gather my thoughts here. I think it is understandable that you are stressed and feeling overwhelmed in your first year at a megacorp as your first job post-graduation, especially if you've taken on a bunch of work that would have gone to other people. Like, yeah, that sounds stressful. And I can understand the concern that if I get promoted, I will be more stressed because there will be even higher expectations of me.
Yeah, that might not be true.
I don't think that is what would happen. I think you're right that especially early career, there's sort of this expectation that you if you're bright and capable, you kind of move up quickly. I also think that the perception people have of you is different if you're promoted. So right now you're kind of running around juggling a bunch of stuff. I think if you are promoted, you might have a little bit more cred to push back on things and say, hey, I'm actually not going to do this, because it's like your opinion matters more, not just your output. And you get to say, hey, I think it's more important that I spend my time doing this thing instead of this other thing. And so I don't think it means automatically you'll just have to pick up even more and be even more stressed out.
You might feel more pressure and more a sense of ownership at a higher level, but you might not have as high of a workload necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, ideally you are identifying things that are more important for you to spend your time on.
Right.
But it's kind of the same amount of time, or maybe even less as you become more efficient. What about the coding skill, coding fundamentals? I mean, you're in the first job, first promotion. I still think it depends heavily company to company.
Yeah.
But expert wizard level sorceress coder, I don't think getting promoted once means you have nothing left to learn about just the low level like writing of code stuff. I think that kind of never stops for
arrived.
Lots of people. But
level two.
Yeah.
Final level.
Yeah. I mean, are you worried that I could see it being embarrassing to admit, hey, I don't know what this thing, I've never seen this pattern before, or monads, what even are those? But, and then someone looks at your title and is astonished and aghast.
Yeah.
What? A level two engineer and they've never even heard of monads? But I still think one promotion up is not, I think you have a lot of room to learn stuff in public still without it seeming weird.
Yeah, for sure. Especially for your second levels. It's basically first level out of college or whatever you did before megacorp. Second level, still plenty of room for generosity and charity in not knowing everything.
Yeah.
I observed the dynamic at the megacorp I worked at where, which I just have to assume is not the same megacorp that this person worked at, but there might be some relevant details here. And the reason I assume it is because what I'm about to say, which is at my megacorp, it was explicitly stated by the highest levels of leadership that the level one engineering level was not a terminal level. And they had a phrase, up or out, which meant you will either be promoted to the next level or you will be let go because it is expected that you move to that next level. And I even had a very senior engineer explain to me the economics, or at least as he perceived them, the economics of that, which is that at your first level, you are actually a net expense to the company. And that it's not until your second level, where you've demonstrated much more valuable skills, that you become a net positive, like a value producer for the company. And so that was kind of the economic foundation for why they did that. But nevertheless, they did it. And then they did say, yeah, you can settle in at that second level. And they used the term terminal level is what they called that. And they were fine with that. They were like, you could settle
in. Which sounds very intimidating, right? That's like a scary, it's a scary sounding phrase for what actually is like safety.
Right.
It sounds like you're going to be terminated there.
I don't think that one ran through the PR department. Anyway, what I found, though, was that even though they stated that that second level was a terminal level, it wasn't. They expected you to keep promoting and keep promoting multiple levels up, maybe four or five levels up, still keep promoting. And if you don't, I really strongly got the vibe that you were considered not a team player and not ambitious and not part of a growing company and high tech this and that, and we're world class. And anyway, and I got that pressure a lot. And, you know, I had nearly 20 years of experience when I joined my megacorp. No, actually, that was way off. 13 years of experience at that time. And I got tons of pressure to go for promotion. It was almost the only topic my manager ever wanted to talk about with me was my own promotion. So,
really?
Yeah. That was almost every week. And honestly, it was exhausting. I got tired of it. And the process, you know, for a lot of reasons, it burned me out. Because on the one hand, I was perfectly happy to go for a promotion. On the other hand, like so many megacorps, the promotions were heavily influenced by the opportunities you happen to have. And if you didn't have them, you kind of had to, I don't know, kind of force them to exist. And that just created awkwardness and pain. So,
yeah, it's, I know that vibe you're talking about of like, you're kind of just happy working. And if you're trying to get promoted, you have to push a lot, and it can be uncomfortable, especially because there's all these factors outside of your control. And you're exposing yourself to potential pain and disappointment by pushing really hard, and then nothing happens. And mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh.
Exactly. But at a level one, I really don't think these concerns are worthy concerns they don't justify not getting promoted. Moving to that second level at almost any tech company I'm aware of, any of the mega tech companies, is really nothing but a net positive. I mean, yeah, there's a little more expectation that you do better work, but there's not enough more expectation that you work more hours per se, and you will get better at this job over time.
I want to zoom in on the hours thing. I feel like that's a thing you could just talk about right now, separate from promotion. You are worried about work-life balance and stress, and I think you can bring this subject up in a way that doesn't come across as, hey, I would like to work less and do less for the company. Which I could see maybe being a little bit concerning if you're thinking about promotion and you don't want to come across as like going the wrong direction. But I don't think your manager would like you to be stressed and overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. You probably won't be doing your best work in that state.
Yeah. And so I would try to work on fixing that separate from the promotion discussion even.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just like now in your current level. Because it's not a healthy long-term state to be in. I've been there, usually self-imposed, sometimes external pressure, but it's not happy. My yeah. life has not been happy when I've done that.
Yep.
Have we answered the question?
I think so. I say go for the promotion. Your work-life balance will sort it out. In fact, you'll have more influence and power, or more control over your work-life balance, I think, the more you get promoted. And I think it'll be fine. And you'll have more money. to be able to have a better, more to spend on interesting things to do in the life side of the work-life balance.
You can buy a house even closer in the parking lot.
Yeah, imagine.
Shorten that commute even more.
You know, that
3
house
miles
you,
away.
Yeah, that house you've been passing halfway to work every day, that could be you.
Yeah. That underground bunker in the middle of the parking complex?
Yeah. You could live there.
No longer will you just, yeah, you won't have to look enviously. Ah, if only I could live in a windowless concrete dungeon. That could be yours.
Then you can learn the true meaning of life, which is acquiring more stuff, climbing a ladder that has infinite rungs.
Yeah. Well, I think that means we've answered the question.
I think so.
What can people do if they want their own questions answered?
If you want your own question answered, go to softskills.audio and click the support us on Patreon button. No, that's not the button. Man, I said the wrong button. You could click that one too, but it won't get you a question answered. It'll get something red online.
I mean, listen, if you put a question in the Patreon name field, we may or may not weigh that.
Yeah, we'll answer it.
You've got some skin in the game, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. But if you want your question really answered, go to softskills.audio and click the Ask a Question button where you can fill out our form. This is the part of the show where we do the non-obligatory, from the heart, thank you to everyone who fills those out every week. We love reading your questions, and we really appreciate you writing them in. You guys keep the show going. So thank you.
We do appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right, we will catch you next week.